The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
For joining us today, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we love to bring you shows right here on Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network. You can find us at progressiveradionetwork.com for cutting-edge shows on health and wellness, and also, of course, a focus on sustainably living on our planet as a species, which is becoming a more and more interesting topic, of course, with the various challenges that we are all facing. And right here at Progressive Radio Network is where you can find out how you can survive and prosper. And one of the many topics that would be an excellent thing to focus on for yourself and your family right now is the use of herbal medicine. Herbal medicine is much, much safer than pharmaceutical drugs, even though, of course, as we see politically right now, they're coming out with studies every week where the headline says something like, vitamins kill people, but when you read the study itself, that's actually not what the study is saying, if you know how to read a study. But, of course, they're isolating one part and blowing that up as the takeaway headline message. And it very much seems like it's a specific focused agenda because there are laws that are coming into place right now that will limit the sales of herbs and supplements. And simultaneously, there's a huge PR promotion of the negative effects of natural remedies. Although if you look at the data from the Center for Disease Control, you will see that actually it is skewed towards the side of pharmaceutical drugs being extremely dangerous. So you need to dig a little bit below the headlines, actually read those studies for yourself, and make sure that you have knowledge at your fingertips to take care of yourself and your family with natural remedies, including herbs. And today we're going to have as our guest the author of a book called Herbal Healing for Children, A Parent's Guide to Treatments for Common Childhood Illnesses, and that is Demetria Clark. And Demetria is a North American herbalist who specializes in herbs for pregnancy, birth, postpartum, nursing, and children. And she is a traditional family herbalist and has worked with families for over 20 years in using herbs, aromatherapy, acting as a midwife, doula, and traditional medicine maker. She works both in the U.S. and Europe, blending the two traditions, and Demetria lectures extensively on herbal care for various issues such as sexuality, pregnancy, and overall health for women. She believes in families having options to self-empower and have health and wellness options. And she is the founder and director of the Heart of Herbs Herbal School. You can find her at heartofherbs.com. And we'd like to welcome you to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thanks for being with us today, Demetria.
Well, thank you so much for having me. What a nice introduction.
Well, I've been doing herbal medicine for a very long time, and myself have delivered over 200 babies at home and women who chose to have home birth. So I've been very involved with this topic, and your book is a wonderful hands-on book that parents can use to help themselves and their families. Now, what made you really focus on writing this book?
Well, it was primarily it was parents saying, how am I supposed to remember all that? Or if we, you know, would do a consultation together, or isn't there just a good book out there? And I'd say, there's lots of great books. And they would say, no, I want one that sounds like you're talking to me. I want one that's really easy to use. I want one that... And I said, oh, okay, well, all right, I'll do that. And I contacted a publisher, and they said, sounds like a good idea, and the book was born. You know, it was one of those kind of kismet things. It just kind of happened, and it was really just about giving parents a useful tool, something that they can actively, you know, just like, you know, your one cookbook that always has everything you need in it. And this was kind of what I wanted to give parents. It's not too big. It's not too, you know, it isn't full of impractical information. It's just, I need this for this. Boom. Oh, there's an idea. And that's what we wanted, you know, that's what we wanted to do, and that's what we did.
Well, in Herbal Medicine for Children, you have recipes, tips on keeping children healthy, because really that's the way to go, keep people as healthy as possible. My own children, who are 37 and 32, have never had an antibiotic or a vaccination. So I've been really focusing on this for many, many decades, and I am totally convinced that it really leads to a healthier life, a happier life, and also a less expensive life, because when people have their children on drugs constantly, the costs escalate and the use of drugs escalate. So it goes hand in hand in sort of a negative downward spiral. Well, the kind of information you're sharing actually supports overall health and wellness.
Oh, I completely agree. I recently had a gentleman say to me that he was so upset that he hadn't found the book earlier. He had just taken his son in. There were some issues with ear infections, and a few hundred dollars later, essentially, he found the book, and he emailed me and contacted me afterwards and said, you know, if I had had this book, I could have saved myself a few hundred dollars right away. And I thought, wow, I hadn't really thought of it that way. But it's true what you're saying. It makes it more sustainable, you know, following a natural lifestyle, you know, where things are easily accessible from your own environment. You're just, by nature itself, doing what's best for the environment without even having to think about it. You know, if you can find things that are in your yard that are edible or medicinal, and find things at your farmer's market or your local stores, you're definitely participating in a green movement without even it being a conscious decision, because it's part of your health policy for your family or your new way of life, you know.
Also, you begin the book by sharing that you had sort of an innate interest in natural medicine. And one of the things you share is that you grew up in a military family, which is why you found yourself in sort of bouncing around and moving quite a bit as a child. And one just might wonder if the plants everywhere sort of became your friends, because when you move a lot as a child, you do lose friendships, and sometimes that's rather painful. But perhaps the connection to plants was something that was sort of a permanent connection for you.
Oh, definitely. And there was also just, you know, because we lived in very diverse ecosystems, from Kodiak Island, Alaska, to Alabama, North Carolina, Oregon, you know, and everything's so different. The dirt smells different. The plants are different. So you kind of had to, the bugs are different. You kind of had to learn, you know, about something. So there was something that interested me right away. Well, what's that little purple flower, or what's that big purple flower? You know, and it really became part of the way that we moved. You know, we learned about where we were living, and, you know, and that was really helpful, I think, for me, you know, moving so much. And then the kind of people that military children come in contact with, it's a big cosmic stew of every kind of culture in the United States or outside of the United States, if one of the spouses was from another country or the children were. And so you kind of got all this exposure that I don't think that a lot of people appreciate, you know, about being part of that community. And I just thought it was just the coolest thing in the world to, you know, just what is that for, and why are you doing that? I was one of those kids that parents probably wish would shut up.
Oh, quite the opposite.
I ask questions all the time, you know. Why are you doing that? Well, because my daughter's anemic, and we do this, and where we come from, and, you know, so it was just kind of like, oh, wow, and what's anemia, you know, and you know, I probably drove people crazy along the way, but
well,
they were all very nice to me.
Right. So, yeah, so that was one of the things that led you to that. And then as you got older, did you have a more conscious realization about the fact that herbs could be something that you actually specialize in as a profession?
Well, I'd always known what an herbalist was, and I don't know why I knew that. You know, my mom was a little bit of, like, the health foodie type, and
well, apparently you do share that your mom actually worked in a health food store.
Yeah, my mom worked in a health food store. She always gardened. She didn't believe in pesticides. And it wasn't because, you know, she was on some kind of crusade or one thing or another. It was just that wasn't how it was done. Her family didn't do that. You didn't, you know, put poison in the earth and then expect your children to eat the fruit of the vine. So it was just kind of, my mother is very practical, and I think I got that from her. You know, if it doesn't really make sense, then she's not going to do it. You know, so she was, you know, could she never, you know, people were like, oh, you're organic. And I remember her being like, yeah, I guess. I mean, we just don't do that. You know, before being organic was this big thing.
Just, right, the word wasn't even there.
Yeah, she was just like, well, why would I poison my tomatoes and then tell my kids it's safe to eat them out of the garden? Why would I even put an obstacle to them eating fresh fruits and vegetables? Because if you tell a kid, well, you got to bring it inside, you have to do this, you have to do that, you know, they're going to be like, oh, forget it. You know, I'll go get something else that's easily accessible. And she wanted us to eat fruits and vegetables. She didn't want us, you know, to run inside and try to find a cookie in the freezer or something. So, you know, it's just very much a practical way to live and a safe way to live. And we didn't have a lot of money, so you wouldn't have wasted money on things that weren't going to have an optimal turnout for your dollar. So, you know, my mom was really smart that way.
What a great
story. I guess she was ahead of her time.
Yeah, you know, kind of. Well, ahead or behind, because the kind of herbalism that you talk about in your book, Herbal Healing for Children, A Parent's Guide to Treatments for Common Childhood Illnesses, is not new information. It's
mm-hmm.
actually ancient information, and it's actually something that everybody knew just maybe two or so generations ago. So it's not being rediscovered, but you certainly are resharing something that was recently lost.
Yeah, no, I agree. A lot of people, you know, there is kind of this mysticism around herbalism. And this, you know, you have to know how to properly tap in to get the information. And or it's a club. And I don't feel that way. I feel it's kind of like, the information's there. I cannot come up with anything that's profound or completely, you know, new. I mean, because that's saying that I'd be some kind of super brainiac genius and discounting the efforts of my elders throughout history. Because the reality is, we always knew this. And the fact that we've been losing it over the past 200 and 300 years does not mean that, you know, this information coming out bound in a book form is somehow more relevant or real than the information that existed previously. I completely agree with you on that.
Now, however, the fact is that your presentation is also very modern for a modern mother.
Yeah. I know what it's like to be worried about a ear infection in the middle of the night or teething babies, and, you know, I wanted something that, you know, when parents used to call me, I had kind of an open door policy with my clients, and they could call me when they needed me. And I'd always ask three questions. What's in the backyard? What's in your medicine cabinet and refrigerator? What's in your medicine chest? And what's in your spice rack and your refrigerator? And so there were three areas that they needed to give me information from. And then I could say, oh, well, you've got cinnamon, you can use that, you've got this, you can do that. And it was, you know, very much, I wanted to kind of have that feel with the book. Like, look, it doesn't have to be something where you're ordering something from 1,200 miles away and it's going to take a week and a half to get to you. There are things that you can use in your grocery store, in your refrigerator, in your backyard, and it's not something that has to cost you a lot of money, and it's not something that you have to be afraid of, because a lot of people are really afraid of herbalism, which I never understood. You know, I just kind of always, to me, it was like there was no difference between a cup of tea and eating a salad. Like, I wouldn't, you know, go, oh my goodness, that's a new kind of green. I don't know if I should eat that. You know, it was just kind of, you know, so that was
that's
a learning
amazing.
Curve for
that's
me growing
might,
up.
Exactly. They might not be afraid to use, let's say, even a children's Tylenol or an other over-the-counter drug, which has a phenomenal toxicity rate, and yet they would be afraid to use an herb.
Well, yeah, and we overuse those drugs. I mean, I've traveled all over the world, and literally almost every single flight I get on, I will hear parents of young children discussing either giving their kid Tylenol so they can sleep on the plane or Motrin to sleep on the plane. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, oh, my goodness, just let your kid run wild up and down the thing. I don't care if your kid bothers me for 8 hours screaming its head off because it's bored or wants to run around. Let him do that. Don't, you know, don't give them extra Tylenol or extra Motrin so they'll sleep. And it was really, it's always interesting, this idea that we have about children's drugs that, oh, you know, just give them a dropper full of that, and people don't even know what it is. And they've never read the side effects. It just comes in a nice pink color, and so it must be safe. And that's always interesting to me.
That's so true. Well, you know, why do you think that herbalism is now sort of having a renaissance in popularity? My theory, one of my theories, is the fact that as people are losing their health insurance benefits, or maybe they have health insurance but no more drug coverage, that a prescription, which used to be free, is now hugely expensive. And now an herb might be a more cost-effective intervention.
I agree. I mean, I've often have had that similar idea that, you know, I think, one, it's desperation. You have to find a way to take care of your family, and if the infrastructure that you relied on before is now unreliable, then as a responsible parent or anyone, you would say to yourself, well, I need to know what I can do. I need to empower myself. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to wait around for them to tell me that my ear infection is worthy of treatment or my toothache is worthy of treatment. And so I think people are taking the reins and saying, okay, we're going to ride this horse because I just can't handle having to beg for something that I pay for or having to beg for something that should be rightfully mine. And then I think also the side effects. Most of my students who have been suffering from an illness who come and study with me, a lot of it is the side effects of the drugs. They just say, there has to be something else I can do. This is ridiculous. You know, I sit here and I feel sick, or, you know, my tongue's swollen, or I have diarrhea. You know, they have all these things going on, and I'll say, well, you know, is that part of the drug? Or, oh, no, that's just the side effects. Don't even let me, you know, get started on the action of the drug. And, you know, so whenever someone tells me something, you know, I'll go and look it up, and I'll be like, oh, my goodness, heart palpitations and dizziness. I'm like, I wouldn't even want to drive on that, you know. But that's, you know, some of the things that people deal with from drugs. So I think it's probably a little bit of everything, you know, just wanting to grab hold of taking care of themselves again and not, you know, I know I've talked to a few men that I've worked with who've had health insurance and they've lost their health insurance. And for them, you know, when they enrolled in the program, one of the things is that they felt like they couldn't provide for their family. Because this was part of the deal. They had the job, and they got their health insurance, and they're making their health insurance payments, and then they keep going up and up and up. And they really felt like, you know, this isn't fair. I need to do something on my own. And, you know, and they did. So I definitely agree with you that something's going to change. I mean, there's a shift, which is good for herbalism on one hand, but as herbalism gets more powerful or people trust it more and rely on it more, then we're going to see some of the negative political aspects too.
Yeah, that's what's coming in right now. Exactly. I do think that as herbal medicine grows in terms of the chunk of money that people are investing in it and the belief that they have in it, the pharmaceutical industry is now reacting by moving into controlling herbal medicine. So I think on a political level, we very much see that happening. But your kind of information that you have in herbal healing for children, I think will still be safe because you talk about, as you said, many things that are kitchen herbs and mm-hmm. things that people can grow themselves and how to use them medicinally, which is very, very important. Well, believe it or not, our time is running along, so we're going to take just a couple-minute break right here, Demetria, and when we come back, we will reintroduce you along with your book, Herbal Healing for Children, and we'll talk about some of the specific content that you have in here, like safety tips for parents and specific herbs that people may want to have in their herbal medicine chest. So we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I do invite all you listeners to take a look at our website, and you can see us at naturesanswer.com. Also, you can visit naturalnurse.com, and if you would like a free newsletter, you can go to the lower left-hand corner and just type in your email, and you will get that. We also take you on herb walks in the local area to identify outside herbal medicine and how you can gather it and make it into your own medicine. And if you'd like to see where we're lecturing, just visit naturalnurse.com and look at schedules. And you will see that we have a very busy and daily schedule of events for you to join in with, or you can also study in our herbal education program. Our guest today is the author of Herbal Healing for Children, A Parent's Guide to Treatments for Common Childhood Illnesses, Demetria Clark. And we're talking about Demetria's book, Herbal Healing for Children. Now, you have so many great tips in this book for parents, and let's talk about some of them. For instance, is it possible for parents to make their own medicine for their children so they know what's in it and that it's safe?
Oh, definitely. And we provide recipes for every ailment that we discuss. We also provide recipes for herbal medicine for that ailment and like ailments. So what we tried to do is to make sure that we weren't just spouting, use this herb, and this herb. We were saying, okay, you can use these herbs, you can use them these ways, and this is how you make it. Because often, parents, you know, they want to have that control, or they can't afford to necessarily try a few different herbal remedies to see how they work for their child, but they can certainly find things that are for free in their yard, and they have access to many herbal medicine is made very easily and very simply, and parents can really, you know, find what works for their child without a huge investment.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that you specifically recommend. Like you mentioned ear infections a couple of times. That's, you know, I am also a professor at a medical school, and one of the things I do is teach physicians how they can create natural protocols. And in that particular topic, ear infections is very popular because right now, the American Pediatric Journal has recommended that actually physicians do not give antibiotics, but instead they watch and wait. And both parents and the physicians are not happy with that watch and wait because they feel like they're doing nothing, which is what they're doing. And yet you have a wonderful protocol in your book, Herbal Healing for Children, that you can do.
Oh, yeah. And well, you know, it's funny because ear infection was one of the only things that I had ever took my children in for. And it was only once for each child. And I just wanted to make sure that's what they actually had. And then upon leaving, they said, well, here's your prescription. And I said, this is what I'm using instead. And both times, 500 miles apart, the nurse practitioner in one instance and the physician in the other went, oh, cool, those will work much better. And it was really funny because I was, you know, such a young mom, and I was so worried that they were going to give me a hard time about saying, no, I'm not going to use the prescription. And it just turned out to be the exact opposite. So I can understand why parents would want something because you never want to see your child in pain. But on the other hand, sometimes things have to get better on their own, and we can't fix everything always. And then often the fixes that are being offered, especially in the instance of ear infections, often cause a lot of other issues. For some children get rashes from the antibiotics. Other children get diarrhea. It makes the body less able to fight off the next ear infection, or the parents don't finish the course of antibiotics, which causes a whole other issue in itself. And so we came up with a few different ideas for ear infections, and we've been using them for years in my practice, but parents seem to really love the ear infection remedies, and it seems to be the thing that gets them first really interested in herbal medicine. So that's why I bring it up, because it's almost everyone deals with an ear infection at some point, or a friend of theirs does, because they are very common. And so it's nice to just have, you know, a nice little simple protocol that moms can share with each other.
Well, let's talk about what that might be, because it is good, although you said you might wait till somebody has a health issue and then talk about what's in your kitchen, you know, like what's in your wallet, that ad. But
yeah.
Perhaps it's even better to get something like your book, Herbal Healing for Children, and then get all those things and just have them in the house. So if it is 2 in the morning and you're having a child that has a symptom, you know what to reach for. Even if you don't memorize it, you can look it up in the book then, but you know you'll have it there.
Yeah, well, you know, that I will say that I have recommended to parents in the middle of the night situation who didn't have garlic or mullein or St. John's wort oil on hand, but they did have olive oil. I did suggest 2 drops of olive oil in each ear, and for those families, that seemed to really work. So in an acute situation, I wouldn't be adverse to telling a parent, because we all know olive oil is so healing, and so that seemed to work for them. But a garlic oil is made the same way as someone would make a garlic oil for cooking. It's
so
simple.
So tell us how you do that.
Well, I try to find a really good quality olive oil, organic, cold pressed, but in reality, use whatever olive oil you can afford. Do the best that you can for your family without feeling any guilt. And I like to put it in a pint jar, and I put in a lot of garlic. I put in a few heads of garlic, and it's nice and diced up, and I fill the jar with olive oil, and I allow it to steep for at least 2 weeks, and then I refrigerate it for long-term use after I strain out the garlic, and personally, you know, and then I keep it in the refrigerator, and I have to remind family that that's not the food oil, so leave it, you know, I've got to label it, but, you know, it's very simple, and if a woman decided to make a pint of that, or a man, for their children, it's plenty, so they could split that with, you know, four other people, and you've just covered, you know, four families potentially, because you usually only need a few drops at a time. So it's not like you're going to be using tablespoons of it at a time, and usually the effect is almost, for my children, it always seemed like it was immediate. But that may have just been like romantic mama thinking. But, you know, it does seem to work really quickly, and it gives parents a tool that they have on hand right away, and it's very simple to make, and it's very inexpensive. But you can also add mullein flour or St. John's wort flowers. And usually I would make a blend like that if I was making it for a few clients that combined all three, because the St. John's wort oil also assists with the pain. And that really is something that's very, you know, easy to make, especially if you do it when the flowers are in bloom.
Yeah, you have to pick it while it's in bloom. Or you can get it in the health food store. There is mullein flower oil available. Mm-hmm. Nature's Answer makes it. And, you know, it's, I think, fun to make your own. But in case you missed the season, you still can actually find these things, luckily, in the health food stores right now. And what I used to do with my children and what I do now with my patients, and I've been doing this for over 35 years, is I actually have parents purchase an otoscope, which mm-hmm. is what the same thing the doctors use to look in ears, and I have them start looking in their children's ears every day so that you get to understand what it looks like when it's normal. Mm-hmm. Then at the first sign, what happens is there's a redness and swelling of the very small capillaries that you can see through the otoscope in the ear. And when that starts to happen, that's when I start using the mullein flower ear oil or the garlic oil, along with giving oral, perhaps olive leaf extract, you know, just a mild immune support, and vitamin C. And therefore, we don't wait till there's a whole widely progressed illness to begin to treat.
Yeah, that's funny that you said it about the otoscope. I used to do that, and all my friends used to say I was such a geek. So I'm glad you recommend it to clients. I think that's such a wonderful idea.
Sure, because it's about self-care and self-control. And it's not like you have to go to medical school for 8 years to be able to look through an otoscope.
Definitely.
It has to teach you. On the other hand, it is difficult even for a trained doctor to be able to spot that beginning change. But that's why if you have a baseline by looking every day, you can know when your child is even beginning to have a problem.
Oh, I definitely agree. Another thing I like to suggest for ear infections is if the mother is breastfeeding, to put a few drops of breast milk in the ear. And that is probably one of the best, quote, cures there is. It's well documented. You can, you know, look it up, and it's free. It's very easy. I know some people may be going, ah, but in reality, it was probably done for about, I don't know, 5,000 years.
Well, yeah, since humans have been around. And another thing that works for excellently is red eye or irritated eye or eye infections.
Oh, yeah, pink eye?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I think that's great for that.
Now, when you have people gathering herbs, do you think it's best to gather wild herbs or to use ones that are already prepared? Again, people say things like, oh, what if a dog went to the bathroom there? Well, that's still less problematic than toxic chemicals that are sprayed on commercial food.
Well, have you ever driven by a place where individuals are harvesting vegetables?
And it might be right on the side of the road, right?
Well, there's that, but there's also, 100, 200 acre fields don't have bathrooms. Has anyone ever thought of that?
That's true. Good point.
I'm not really worried about if it's a good, clean, safe source, and it's the dirt is good and the air is good. I'm not going to worry a little bit about, you know, well, maybe a dog peed on it, or maybe a man peed on it. Because in reality, you know, you're going to clean stuff off. Urine evaporates, and, you know, it doesn't leave a toxic residue behind, you know, and there is rain and there is air and there is evaporation. So that's, you know, and it breaks down into natural components. I don't really worry so much about that. What I do worry about is, especially with new students, they get so excited, and sometimes, you know, they'll just harvest because they see it. And I worry about people over wildcrafting from areas that really aren't safe, taking too much.
Well, let's talk about that term wildcrafting, because that's a very important term. You and I are talking about it, and we're obviously herbalists, so we know what we mean. But let's let our audience know what wildcrafting is.
Well, wildcrafting is when you harvest herbs from the wild. And it can be from a variety of different sources. Some people, you know, will use fields or mountainsides or the forest. It really just depends on what your local ecosystem is like. But there are really specific rules that herbalists like to follow, like not taking more than you need, not taking more than, you know, I say to my students 2-5% of, you know, if you're in a big field of something, then really only take what you're going to use. Don't go crazy just because it's there. I mean, how many gallons of, you know, yarrow tincture can you possibly use, you know, if you're doing it for your family? Because often people get really excited and, you know, wow, there's tons of it. I'm going to take a ton of it. But in reality, if everyone had that same idea, we would find, you know, issues with finding plants in the wild. I also always tell people to look at what the local laws are to make sure that you're not harvesting plants that aren't supposed to be taken off of federal or state land, that you're not going into your neighbor's yard and taking from their environment because it's something that you want, and communicating and telling people. I've never found anyone who has said no to me when I've asked.
Me too.
You know, and
They don't know what you want.
You have a ton of elderberries all along that field. Do you mind if I go? Oh, please take them. You know, I don't know what to do with them. And, you know, people are more than happy to share. And also sometimes it's nice to bring them. Well, this is the elderberry syrup I made with all those elderberries. Here's a, you know, here's a jar. We use it for everything, but it's great on pancakes. It's great, you know. You know, warmed up and in oatmeal. It's great as medicine. It's great as this. And, you know, sharing the principles behind what you're doing, but also, forming community and the bonds with your your fellow neighbors.
And you have wonderful recipes in this book for all kinds of homemade remedies and beauty products as well. I love your names for them too, like your Rock and Rose Toner.
I used to run an herbal skincare company years ago, and so a lot of those are based on that. And I included them. I've actually had one or two people email me and say, "Why would you put products for acne in a book for children?"
Yeah, right.
And I say it's for children from birth to 18, and I don't know very many teenagers that are like, "Oh, cool, I've got a few more zits. This is awesome," you know? So I wanted to include things that parents can assist their kids with the whole time that they're still their kids. You know, we only have 18 years of them being, you know, before they say, "I'm an adult, I don't have to listen to you," you know? So I wanted, you know, mothers and daughters always email me, or when I see them someplace, they tell me, "Oh, you know, we did a little spa day with the different skincare," and it's like, that's just so cool to me, you know, that they're using it to connect with each other.
Yes. Well, let's talk about some of those recipes, because I love that one, Rock and Rose Toner. Now, you're talking about using witch hazel, but do you mean witch hazel extract or tincture or something that's more popular that would just be like in a regular drugstore?
Well, witch hazel tincture, but if you can't make that or you don't make that, you can use a commercial witch hazel, which obviously, for many reasons, I would say isn't something that personally I would think would would be something that I would necessarily want. But if you go to the health food store, you can find natural witch hazel. You can find witch hazel that has a little color left in it. You know, so there are supplies out there.
Yes, and that's a great one. Now, I have a recipe in my book, The Natural Medicine Chest, where we actually take rose petals and make them into rosary beads. So there's all kinds of fun things that you can do.
Those are so cool, and they smell nice.
Yeah, and you just poke holes through them, and as you wear them, the oils on your skin actually warm them, and they have that scent for many years. So that's an interesting thing. All of these things are just stuff that really, really was so commonly used years ago. Now, a big problem for children is bedwetting, and especially I have seen that in my practice when a second child is born, and the first one, who already had that under control, I guess feels threatened about the newcomer.
And the regression that occurs.
Yeah, exactly, and there's all kinds of psychological issues. But you actually have a remedy for that right in your book, Herbal Healing for Children. Let's talk about that remedy.
Well, I came up with this because it was kind of something that, you know, parents would ask me. I also, I come from a large family, and I did have two siblings that were bedwetters, and I'm not going to say their name because I don't want to hear about it later.
But, good idea.
You know, it was just something that was in my mind as, you know, things that happen with kids, and there's so much negativity around bedwetting. I mean, they talk about blankets that shock kids awake and, you know, diapers that turn into gel beads or underwear that sets off an alarm, and that all just sounds really scary to me. So we included two recipes, and both of them contain St. John's wort, which has a long history of being, well, it's one of my favorite herbs, if you can't tell, but it has a long history of working on the nervous system, and it does have a long historical link of working with bedwetting. And, you know, then it contains lemon balm and orange flower. So it's a beautiful color. It's a beautiful taste. It's a beautiful scent. And it just, it's nice and soothing. You can give the child the tincture, you know, a few drops before bed, and, you know, or do a half a cup of a tea before dinner time, or a cup, depending upon their age. And it really does seem to work, and we've gotten lots of feedback over the past, you know, 15, 20 years about how it really helped. And I think part of it is, and I'll be completely honest, I think part of it is saying, we're going to make this tea, and we're going to give you back control. Because I'm really about empowerment, and I'm really about giving parents tools, but then they also can give their children the tools. I'm going to take this. This is going to help me, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be able to do this, or I'm going to be able to relax about going to bed and not worry about, you know, I'm going to pee the bed tonight. If you think about the kind of anxiety and stress that these children are probably dealing with falling asleep because they don't want to disappoint their family, they don't want to wake up wet and cold. There's a whole there's a whole circle that goes with it, and it isn't just about the herb. It's really about incorporating, you know, everything into that circle of we're gonna help fix this. We're gonna learn what's going on. We're gonna assist you, and you know, and I think it's good for kids to feel empowered like that.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting one, and it's so just simple with lemon balm, dried orange flowers. Now, I don't know where somebody would get orange flowers unless they live in Florida. So I guess that's an ingredient they would have to get somewhere else.
There's a few suppliers that sell it throughout the United States. I wouldn't necessarily say that parents couldn't use orange peel.
Okay.
The orange is more for the, you know, the, and there is the essential oils and the peel, and you know, so I think that that's one of the great things with herbal medicine is that there is some flexibility, and you may find, oh well, some of the dried peel or fresh peel shaved in, you know, the pot of tea, or you know, works for me, you know, and it may not have the same effect for someone else, and they may need the flower, but you know, it does contain, you know, the essential oil like the flower does, and the peel you know, would probably be cheaper too.
That's an excellent idea. Boy, that's a really nice one. And there's so much in this book that makes it really easy, because you have your recipes and then you have your conditions, mild conditions that children might have, such as cough and throat problems. And, you know, you talk about elderberry. Elderberry, of course, is such a wonderful antiviral. We actually understand the mechanism of action, where the elderberry inhibits viruses from being able to enter cells, take over their internal structure in their nucleus, and thereby replicate themselves. So we know it works. And what's so great is that children usually love elderberry because the taste is so good.
Well, and, yeah, and what's so funny about elderberry is, if you've ever had to, you know, if you ever took a class in college where you're reading, you know, Victorian novels, or if that was something that interested you, or anything from those time periods, there was elder wine and scones with elder, and, you know, elder was included in so many different foods, from the berries to the flower, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of funny because, to you know, thinking about it in the herb sense, but it was also a really popular food, and you have to wonder if that was one of the reasons that assisted with its popularity, is people figured out that elderberry makes certain things, you know, you're healthier or whatever, and there's lots of bioflavonoids and vitamins, and, you know, and if it was just, I think, you know, what happened is it just maybe went out of vogue, and which is too bad, because it was so intertwined in our food lives at one point also.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on the Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network, and our show is The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. People can find out more at naturalnurse.com, and also for the book Herbal Healing for Children, and for the author who we've been talking to, Demetria Clark. Demetria, would you say heartofherbs.com would be the best place to find you and your work, your herbal school and your book and all the things you're involved with?
Yes, definitely. And people can always email me, or we, you know, give us a call if they have any questions about anything that we do.
Well, thank you so much. That was
thank
an interesting
you.
Show, and that was for Herbal Healing for Children. Until next week, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And as always, I'm hoping that you stay healthy.